Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Also, you can visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. If you would like to hear prior shows, the last five, the most recent ones, are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about creating change and how we do it and why we do it and how to really make it be a negotiation tool to get us together. So creating change. And I think our first question is going to be, what needs to change before we can achieve a successful outcome? Generally speaking, what needs to change? We've all had quite a bit of experience. We've led negotiations and mediations and workshops and seminars, a lot of us, and a lot of us have been to them, too. And what needs to change? What needs to be encouraged in order for our group, our participants, to have a successful outcome, to make it a good thing? Yeah. What needs to change? And thank you. I see we have lots of participation. Thank you all for being here. And let's see. I think that just as a general statement, most of the things that need to change before we can achieve a successful outcome are kind of attitude type things. Yeah, I see that that's really the number one response. And thank you for all of your responses, and thank you for being here. This is a really good point. Quite a few people are saying that the main thing that needs to change is the attitude, the preconception that we're going to fail, that it's just we're spinning, you know, the expression, I suppose it's kind of an Americanism, and of course this is an international show, but we're spinning our wheels is kind of an expression. It means that we're not going to get anywhere. The wheels are going to spin, but the car's not going to move. We're not going to go up the path. We're not going to achieve the successful outcome. And that's an attitude of failure, isn't it? And, you know, yes, thank you. Quite a few people are mentioning that we did indeed have a show about self-fulfilling prophecy. And that's what that is. Yes. If you say, well, you know, I'll go, but nothing's going to change, and we're not going to reach get a good outcome. It's not going to be successful. Well, that's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it? If you think that, it's a good chance that it won't, that it'll happen, that there will be failure, because you didn't give it a chance, because you never thought about how would it be if we succeeded, and what could we do to make that happen? Yes. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And it's a good point that quite a few people are saying that self-fulfilling prophecy does not necessarily have to be negative. We think of them that way, don't we? Because, well, I suppose because the negative ones are easier to fulfill, but sometimes it's a positive prophecy. And the self-fulfilling prophecy can be, yes, we're going to give it our best try. We're going to succeed this time. We're going to think outside the box. We're going to participate. We're going to make a team, and we're going to go forward to a successful outcome. Wow, that's wonderful. Yes, that's the attitude that doesn't have to change. It's the failure attitude that needs to change, doesn't it? People are saying it's the attitude that we've tried it before, and it never worked. Yeah, tried it before and it never worked. Well, you know, I think it was Thomas Edison who invented the light bulb, and I've forgotten how many failures he had, but he tried a really long time, and he used different kinds of equipment and different kinds of materials for, I think it's called the filament, yes, the filament that lights the bulb, at least in old-fashioned bulbs, incandescent bulbs, yes. And he said, and somebody said, well, how come you kept trying? And he said, well, that was just, you know, that was just 700 ways not to do it until I found the right one. Yeah. So that we've tried it before is an attitude that we need to change. We tried it before and it didn't work. Doesn't mean it's not going to work this time. Here's an important attitude that George and others are talking about. And thank you for all of your participation. And a lot of you are sending me examples. I'm going to call it hostility. People come with the attitude that they really hate the other people in the group, the other participants, because they're not like us, right? There's something about them that we've been trained to hate. Well, that's a hostile attitude. Good point. Thank you very much for your participation. Sylvia and others are saying that it's not only hostility to the other people, but it's possible to have hostility towards the ideas that are being put forward, towards how to get to the goal, for example, kind of hostility towards other people's opinions, in addition to being hostile to them. Thank you. A lot of people are saying that the hostility to other people is really bias. It's bigotry. It's something that we have, well, probably we might not even know the other people who are participating, but we have a learned bias, a bigotry towards, well, what type of a group they're from, like cultural or religious or something like that, you see. And so we need to change the attitude of hostility or of bias towards the other group participants, because we need to make a team, yeah. We need to work together. We need to get to a successful outcome. And it is in all of our best interests to do so, right? It's just that sometimes the various participants need to set aside their attitude of failure, really, correct, and their hostility and their biases and their cultural differences. Yeah, I'm going to call it cultural differences. You know, it's not even necessarily an ethnic culture that we're talking about, like a nationality or a religious difference or something like that. Sometimes within organizations, there's a culture within an organization, and your organization, your company culture, your corporate culture, for example, might be different than the other people, the other participants. And it leads to some miscommunication because there are assumptions being made that aren't true, that aren't necessarily valid. And it leads to miscommunication. It doesn't necessarily have to be something really big. It's a way of doing things, for example, especially if it's a business culture, a way of doing things, a way of organization. And it makes a difference. And I see that sometimes. Sometimes the cultural difference is not what we think of offhand, not the personal culture, what race we are, what religion, what ethnicity. It's a doing business type culture. And that makes a difference too. That's cultural bias also. And you have to sit back and you say, well, they do it differently than we do. It doesn't make it wrong. It makes it different. Let's see if that would be more effective, or maybe we can combine our different ways and make it something that's useful to all of us. You see? Yeah. An attitude of suspicion is being mentioned. Yeah, I don't think that those people are very honest, for example, or truthful. An attitude of suspicion. Yes, good point that sometimes attitudes are caused by, Charles and others are saying that sometimes attitudes are caused by personal experience with the different participants in the group. You're suspicious of them because you've had a less than stellar prior experience. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a new day, a new page, and we need to think about that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's see. We've got a lot of people saying religious differences and cultural. But this is an interesting difference that Chloe has brought together. How about a generational difference? Mm-hmm. We come from different generations. Some of us are older, some of us are younger. And you know, I deal with all kinds of people when I do workshops and seminars and mediations. And there is kind of especially with the next generation in business, there is rather a difference because of technology. Mm-hmm. Isn't that strange? It's because technology has moved so quickly that the younger generation has always known it, and they are more tech-savvy and more likely to want to use technology to meet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not a good thing or a bad thing. It's just a comment. And sometimes there are generational differences. Mm-hmm. I noticed that sometimes people talk in acronyms that are not cross-generational expressions. Okay, this is a little bit embarrassing, but it's a good example. In the United States, and I think all over the world this is probably true, but especially in the United States, and I know this is a global show, but we all know what Disneyland is, right? It's a large amusement park in California, and it is fancy enough so that people take vacation there. It's not just a carnival. It's got stationary rides, and it's got a gate, right? And you pay an admission nowadays. Nowadays, you buy an admission ticket to the entire park, and all of the rides are included, right? Yeah, I'm getting a lot of agreement. Most people seem to know what that is. Yes, so you buy a pass, you buy a ticket, or it's not really a ticket anymore, but you buy an admission, and then everything is included. The rides don't cost extra after you do the admission. Years ago, when I was a kid, and we could all look at my picture and see that that was not just yesterday. I am a generation away from the new the youngest people. And when I was a kid, there was no admission to Disneyland, but the rides cost extra. If you wanted to ride a ride, it cost something, but it didn't cost money. You bought ticket books. And the most impressive rides were an e-ticket. The book had e-tickets up to, I don't know, g-ticket. There were lesser tickets, and the lesser tickets were like the merry-go-round, and the e-tickets were like something really cool. So there was an expression that said, well, it's an e-ticket ride, because everybody knew what that was. You know, something that was exciting, you said, oh, it's an e-ticket. I used the expression, I haven't used it in a while because it doesn't work anymore, but I used it with someone in a different generation than I am, a younger generation, and they had no freaking idea what it was. I had to go through this whole explanation just like I've done here because I know that all of us are all kinds of ages and from all kinds of countries. This is an international show. But you see, it was an expression that I thought was self-explanatory. It meant it was the best, the most exciting, the most expensive, it was the best one. It was an e-ticket. It was an expression that I was familiar with. People in the room had no idea what I was talking about. They really didn't. And it didn't occur to me. See, generational. Mm-hmm. And cultural, thank you. Yes, and cultural too. Because you'd have to have been an American, because I think after they started building Disneylands all over, they didn't have those anymore. See? And so it was something that didn't occur to me until everybody looked blank. But sometimes people went, what's that? And I went through this whole explanation like I've just done. But it is a generational idea and a cultural idea. I used an expression that nobody understood. What's an e-ticket? It's an e-ticket. Well, this didn't mean anything. Do you mean anything in relationship to what we were talking about? You see? Yeah. And sometimes that happens. And, you know, with me, people just ask. But sometimes, especially if you don't, someone doesn't want to appear ignorant in the group, a participant, they don't ask. But then they don't understand either. So that's it's a generational difference and a cultural difference. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, Anthony and others are saying that it's important, just like I learned not to do that and became more cognizant of it. It's important to change the mindset and change your preconceived notions. Mm-hmm. It's a mindset change, isn't it? To remember that we all have differences. But the differences aren't going to impede us because we have the same outcome goal. Mm-hmm. So, we've got all these things that need to be changed. We've got an attitude of failure and that we've tried before and hostility and bias and cultural differences and suspicion and religious differences and generational differences. So we've figured out something that needs to be changed. How are we going to do it? How do we encourage the change? Because after all, we are practical people on this show. And we don't just go, well, it needs to be done somewhere, sometime, somehow. No, we want to know how to do it now so that we can move forward and it doesn't impede us. Yeah. So what are we going to do? How are we going to encourage the change? Manya and others are saying by open dialogue. Very good point. We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about our relationship to the other participants, and what needs to change so that we can go forward successfully. Mm-hmm. Open dialogue. Mm-hmm. You know, Carl and others are using an idea that I have indeed tried when we have really diverse people. Pardon me, took a sip of water. Really diverse people. And there are different sides to the issue, especially. Mm-hmm. Carl and others are pointing out that in order to change, to encourage change, role playing is a good way to do it. Mm-hmm. Will you research and argue the other side, right? So that you can really see that there is some validity in it. And we're going to have to make a compromise so we can go successfully forward between the various, I don't like to call them factions, but sometimes we'd like the same result, but there's really some dissension, some argument about how to get there. Mm-hmm. And people are kind of on one side or the other. And role playing is very good because then you have to be the other side and you have to research it and think like them and you go, oh, well, I didn't look at it from that viewpoint, but now that you mention it, you've got kind of a point and I've got kind of a point and let's compromise and negotiate so that we can go forward as a whole team. Role playing. Mm-hmm. Zilia and others are making a good point that a lot of times when we need to encourage change, it's good to bring in an expert because the expert talks to everyone, right? And isn't have a role, an opinion about the issues. They are an expert because they are the third party impartial. And they kind of keep things going. Mm-hmm. And they prevent the differences from impairing the result. And it's very important. Actually, this is a very good point, too. A lot of times we are the third party impartial because we're the mediator or the teacher or the producer of the seminar. And third party impartial is a very crucial job because sometimes the parties, the participants are a little close, a little, well, people using the word hostile. I don't like to say hostile, but they're a little excited. And nobody will listen to one side because they figured that they're biased towards their own side. So it's good to have a third party impartial. And yeah, it usually is us. Yeah. Edwards says to acknowledge the differences and agree to regard them as diverse strengths. Oh, I so like that. Yes. You know, it's kind of like we talked about wording and how things, you can word things as a problem or you can word things as an adventure. And it's a good point to acknowledge the differences and agree that they, to regard them as diverse strengths. It's not a problem that we have differences. It makes us strong that everybody knows different things and brings their ideas to the table. That's good. You see, encouraging change, sometimes the change, and this is a very good point, thank you, people are saying the change might be in the way we conduct the workshop or seminar or mediation. Yeah, that might be the change. We might be encouraging change in our own style. Because perhaps we have regarded change as a negative. Yeah, we kind of have, haven't we? We've used all kinds of negatives because we want to encourage change, and we don't want to change good things. Does that make sense? Yeah. But to have change and to get better and less biased and less hostile and more accommodating and more team building, well, that's a wonderful thing. Yeah, that's not a burden. That's an adventure. Good point. Yeah. Esperanza says that you need to welcome team building and make it fun. Yeah, it's not. It's a fun thing to do. It's not a chore. It's not a punishment. It's something that we want to do. Welcome team building. It's fun. You know, this is an interesting point that Crystal is making, that not only to welcome team building, but to welcome individual building so that you can accept team mentorship. Welcome individual building so that you can accept team membership. The individuals have to change in order to make a strong team. We have to change towards the team, right? Towards the participants, towards creating a successful outcome. Because when you change, you go towards something, right? And the idea is to go towards each other. Yeah. Sean says the change, to encourage change, needs consistent and reasonable education. I think that's true. To encourage change needs consistent and reasonable education. If you don't tell people how it is they're supposed to act, how are they going to know? Yeah, it's not inherent in all of us. How are you going to know how you're supposed to act, how you're supposed to respond? If someone doesn't educate you, doesn't tell you how to effectuate change, right? To all work towards being able to work with each other. Yeah. Consistent and reasonable standards of group activities, says Dalmira. Consistent and reasonable education. And now Dalmira is adding consistent and reasonable standards of group activity. Such as clear participation rules and the rules of civility. such as clear participation rules and the rules of civility.
Yeah.
A lot of us, me included, actually pass around kind of a little laws of civility sheet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've talked about this before, by the way. Like to hear prior shows? The last five archived on our radio station. Hello. The last five archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Yeah. And we've talked about civility rules. Very important. And I actually, well, depending on the group, yeah, I'm going to say it depends, because it depends how large the group and how well they know each other. But a lot of us have written down civility rules, and they are very basic, about taking turns and things like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We actually did an entire show. You can look it up, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Mm-hmm. And clear participation rules, too. I like to make sure that everyone participates. First of all, it makes it more interesting. Mm-hmm. We hear from everyone. And you need, some people are extroverts. They like to talk. And some people really don't want to. They don't like to. And they won't unless they're kind of called on. Mm-hmm. I give them a little bit of warning, too. Yeah. You know, Charles says that you need an emphasis on common goals, not differences. Yeah, that's the idea. The emphasis is on common on the common goal, not differences. Mm-hmm. Emily and others are saying that you could actually, and you should, actually set aside your differences for the special purpose, for this special purpose, and work together. We don't have to like each other as friends, relatives, bosom buddies. No, it's not required that we become friends. But for this specific purpose, we need to work together. So we're going to have to set aside our differences. And we're going to have to change to be accommodating to get the job done, to get the successful outcome. Mm-hmm. And if you work together for a specific purpose, Stephen and others are saying that it naturally causes your opinions to change. I think it does. Mm-hmm. If you work closely with someone because for this specific purpose you need to work together, and they are not a person that you ordinarily would have encountered, mm-hmm, that changes your attitude towards them. And to whatever type of person they are, because humans do like to make connections like that. We like to go, well, you know, this kind of a culture is different than this one. Mm-hmm. So, if we're naturally causing a change in opinion, and we need to welcome the individual, mm-hmm, so that you can accept team membership. How do we change long-held opinions and preconceptions? That's what really the biases are. They're long-held opinions and preconceptions. And we had a discussion on a different show about the difference between bias and bigotry. And we decided that bigotry is something that actually somebody teaches you. Somebody you respect teaches you to be suspicious of the other. So how do we change this? How do we change the long-held opinions and the preconceptions? Mm-hmm. You know, Nora's making an excellent point, and several other people too. Mm-hmm. She says that you look at our own opinions and preconceptions first. Look at our own opinions and preconceptions first. You know, it's a very good idea because we're not perfect either. Yeah, I hate to tell this to you, but we're not. Yeah, we need to look at our opinions and preconceptions and our attitude because we're the leader. And the leader sets the tone for the group, right? Yeah, the leader sets the tone. The leader is the leader, but they... that can't have those attitude problems and the biases and the preconceptions. The leader has the most responsibility of all to create change. And sometimes the create change, you know those old expressions, those old songs and stuff, creating change belongs to me. I have to do it before I can go out and help. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Carolyn says you need to treat change as an adventure, not a chore. An adventure, not a chore. Mm-hmm. Gunther says that we create change by understanding that change is the only way to succeed. You need to pool your resources and work together. Yeah, generally speaking, that whatever it is that we're trying to accomplish, it's a team thing. And we wouldn't be forming a group, right? Right. Mm-hmm. And you need to pool your resources and work together. Yes, resources is not necessarily money. People are asking whether or not that is like a common pot, a common money. And the answer is no, it's not necessarily. Your resources are your people, for example. How about the expertise within your group and the expertise within another group? And it's good to change and perhaps make one group with more power, with more ability to effectuate change. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Meryl says that we need to get together by interacting and finding common ground. Interacting and finding common ground. That certainly does make a difference, because now we know something about each other that, quite frankly, might be unexpected. But that's what makes it interesting. Yes. Yes. By understanding that change is the only way to succeed. Yeah, and by interacting and finding common ground. Mm-hmm. And that's why we always say that it's good to think about, to view the other group participants as individuals united for a common goal, as Paul puts it. View group participants as individuals united for a common goal. Yeah, we're all people, right? Yeah. We're all individuals, and we've come together because we feel passionate about something. Or, quite frankly, we might be coming together for one of my workshops or seminars and be required to do so. But then you're passionate about keeping your job now, aren't you? Yes. So, but that's what Recipe for Peace Now does, right? We try to get everyone to view their fellow participants as individuals. You view the group participants as individuals united for a common goal. Good way of putting it. Thank you, Meryl. International finding interacting and finding common ground. A common ground. It's kind of an expression, isn't it? It's like a goal. Yeah, but you've got to unite. You got to work together. And if you got to work together, let's create some change so that we can. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason that Recipe for Peace Now advocates using food, using a potluck. It is not, and you guys have heard this before, thank you for being here, it is not because we are hungry necessarily. I mean, it could be dinner. But really the food is a tool to get us together, away from the formality of the discussion, away from the issues, and just get together and have a meal together or have a snack together. But, you know, it lends itself naturally. Oh, how did you make that? How did you learn how? You know, it leads to nice discussion, too. Also, if you have some food in the room, then you won't lose people to wandering off in search of a sandwich or something, you see. So it's all very practical. Now, I am going to say exactly what I say every show. Uh-huh. You think that's not true? Go to recipeforpeacenow.com. Last 5 shows are archived there. All of the shows are archived at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. What I'm going to say is that you need to take a survey amongst your participants and find out if anyone has an allergic reaction to food, what kind of food, a religious prohibition, or a dietary prohibition. Mm-hmm. You relate this information to everyone because we all want to know. Also, I think that you should label the food that is brought, not what it is, meatloaf, but label a list of what's in it, yes, so that I, before I eat it, can look down the list and go, oh, I don't think I should eat that, for one reason or another, you see? Yeah. We don't want anybody to get sick. This is a convivial atmosphere. It is conducive to, I know it's an overworked word, but it's conducive to networking and to making new friends and business acquaintances. Yes, yes. So, we're going to say what it is by listing the ingredients. Then I can judge whether or not I can eat it. Yeah. Also, I think that we should have, as the leader, a little extra food. It's my fetish because I do hate to run out. Makes for a bad party. And I think that we should have at least one safe dish. Now, what makes a dish a safe dish? Well, we've taken the survey, right? And no one is allergic, has a food prohibition, or a religious prohibition to any of the ingredients. Mm-hmm. And we've taken the allergy survey, so we probably don't have anybody who's allergic. And it uses ingredients that in my area, my participants would be familiar with. Now, this is a global show. This may not be a safe recipe to you because people would be unfamiliar what's in it. So these are just general thoughts. Mm-hmm. And we'll get to the adventure recipe. So this is the safe recipe. It's an eggplant and cheese and beef bake. Oh, it's so delicious. Mm. And in this part of the world, because we're in the United States, it's becoming winter. Mm-hmm. And so if you're not, I know this is global, but it's kind of a dish that bakes. But it only bakes for like 20 minutes. So it doesn't heat up the place that bad. And also you can bring it before it needs to be baked and put it in the oven in the room where we're having our meeting, if we have the facilities. It smells wonderful. And it only takes 20 minutes. Well, you preheat the oven. All right, it takes half an hour. So it's an eggplant and beef and cheese bake. Yummy. We've got 3/4 cup of milk. Use the real kind, please, and not the skim kind, the regular milk, I think it's called in the States, the kind that's not all blue and skimmed off. 1 beaten egg. 3/4 cup of flour, just that all-purpose regular flour. A little bit of salt, like 1/2 teaspoon. And we're going to have 2 pounds of eggplant. We're going to peel and cut into kind of thick slices, like, I'm holding up my fingers here, you can't see that. Like 1/4 inch. Mm-hmm. So we peeled it and we cut it into slices. Let's have 3 tablespoons of oil, 1.5 pounds of ground beef. Let's have a nice green pepper that we're going to seed and devein and chop, a medium onion that we're going to chop up. Now here comes the part where I use a can of tomato sauce. If you want to make your own, yours will be better than mine, but this is faster and it's easy for me to come by and inexpensive. So we're going to use a nice big can of tomato sauce, like a 16-ounce can. And then we're going to add another 1/2 can of tomato sauce. So we've got two 16-ounce cans of tomato sauce, or jars, really. Round here, tomato sauce actually comes in a jar. So, but we're not going to use all 2 of them, right? We're going to use 1.5. And if you feel you need a little bit more sauce, we'll talk. Let's have maybe 2 teaspoons of oregano, dried oregano. You know, around here in the States, it's just prepackaged, and it's really kind of a lovely idea because spices and herbs and things do dry out. They lose their taste. You can get something called Italian seasoning. It's all kinds of dried Italian-type herbs, and it's really quite lovely. And if you can get your hands on that, let's have the teaspoon and a half of that. Mm-hmm. Okay. We're going to get ourselves a nice big, like a 3-quart rectangular baking dish, because we're going to cut this like lasagna, right, into squares. And we're going to grease it, and we're going to preheat our oven to 350. And we're going to set that aside. And now we're going to take and we're going to put our egg and our milk, and we're going to whisk them together. And then we're going to put gradually in the flour and maybe a little salt and pepper. What we're doing is we're making a dip for the eggplant slices. Do not do this step just because it's kind of a pain, because it will not come out delicious and yummy, and you'll be sorry. It's going to be all watery and strange. So we've got the milk and egg and the flour. We've all got them combined and whisked, and there's no lumps. We're going to take our eggplant slices. We're going to dip them in the egg mixture. And then we're going to coat with the – did I tell you that the egg and milk is separate and the flour is separate? You understood that, right? We didn't stick the flour in with the egg. What we're doing is we're dipping in the egg and milk mixture, then we're dipping in the flour, coating the eggplant, and then we're going to put it in the hot oil in a skillet and give it a nice fry. It turns nice and brown. You do not need to turn it around on the edges, but you do need to flip it once so it gets brown on each side. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just put them aside. I usually put them on a paper towel just so they kind of drain off the oil. So we've dipped the eggplant slices. We put them in the milk and egg combo. Then we put them in the flour. And then we fried them in some oil in a nice big skillet. Both sides. Takes about 4 minutes. Put them aside. I put them on a paper towel. Okay. Now, let's do the rest of it. We're going to basically cook our chopped meat, our ground meat. So we're going to put in the ground meat, the pepper, and the onion. And we're going to stir that around and kind of break it up until the meat is cooked, turned brown. Now, what have you got in the bottom of your pan? You've got fat. Mm-hmm. You've got runoff from the meat. We're going to drain that off because otherwise everything's going to get kind of watery and strange. Okay. We've now got the meat mixture with the peppers and the onions, and it's nicely drained, and it looks yummy, and it's all cooked through and brown, right? Right. Now is the, and we've drained it. Draining is very important. Now we're going to put in the tomato sauce and the seasoning, the dried herbs. Mm-hmm. Mix it all up real nice. You remember those fried eggplant slices that we dipped and floured and fried on both sides? Now's our big moment. We're going to take our rectangular baking dish. You can use a round one, but it won't make pie slices anyway. You're going to end up cutting it into squares. It just looks nicer. And we're going to put a layer of eggplant slices right in the bottom of the baking dish. We're going to put in half the meat mixture right on top of them. Another layer of eggplant slices. Another layer of tomato and meat. Mm-hmm. And we're going to put some lovely Italian blended mozzarella type. Let's do mozzarella. Let's do some shredded mozzarella on the top. It looks delicious and it tastes delicious too. All done, right? This is going to bake, but it's already cooked because the meat is already cooked and the eggplant's already been fried and everything. So we're going to cover the dish. I usually use foil. Aluminum foil, just because it keeps in the heat. But if you've got an actual cover, it's okay too. We're going to bake for 20 minutes. Gets all nice and hot, and it melts together. We're going to take the cover off. Give it another 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. when the cheese is all melted and it looks nice, we are done. Any kind of a layered kind of soft thing like this needs to sit for about 10 minutes before you try cutting it, because otherwise it is going to be sloppy. It's not going to make a nice piece. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we eat with our eyes as well as with our mouths. Right. So that, yes, it does look kind of like lasagna when you get all done. Isn't that funny? People are saying it looks like lasagna. And, yes, you can put cheese in the middle, too, if you'd like. I usually put it just on the top. That's just, I just like it bubbly on the top. And it's got, and I, you've got all the taste in the meat mixture inside. Pardon me. And that is our safe recipe. Now, is it very safe? Well, it's got tomatoes, but you can see them, right? And you've taken your survey about tomatoes. People would have eaten, well, I am, eaten these types of ingredients, so they know if they can. And it doesn't have a lot of prohibitions to it, except for the tomatoes. All right, it's got some dairy also, too. It's got an egg, and it's got milk, and it's got cheese. But we've taken our survey, right? And it's still in, it's in the list. So that's our safe recipe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, then, yes, don't forget to fry the eggplant. People are going, you don't have to fry the eggplant. Yes, you kind of do. It will not taste the same. You can do it, but it won't taste the same. And if you're not going to fry them with a little bit of egg and flour and breading, so to speak, cut them really, really thin. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it needs to be cooked. I think even if you don't use the breading, it needs to be cooked. It needs to be put in oil and fried around. Okay. So let's go on to our adventure recipe. Now, what makes this an adventure recipe? It certainly seems simpler because it's going to be cashew noodles than the eggplant, beef, and cheese recipe, right? Seems simpler. But it's got nuts, and nuts have a lot of allergies. Mm-hmm. Now, I've used cashews because it's the most delicious. They're also kind of expensive. Please, unless you're positive that everybody can eat it, and everybody's tasted it, already knows they can eat it, don't use peanuts, which are a lot cheaper around here, but they have a really bad allergic reaction to some people. So if you've taken your survey and you can use peanuts, that's fine too, and it would be less expensive. And also this has sweet chili sauce, which is kind of an oddity around here. Mm-hmm. So let's do it. We're going to get about half a pound of those really thin egg noodles. Mm-hmm. You know, I usually advocate using pieces like rotini of pasta because they're easier to scoop up. But this thing really does need the thin noodles, the thin egg noodles. Mm-hmm. And let's have about a quarter of a cup of vegetable oil because we're going to stir fry stuff. Mm-hmm. About 3/4 of a cup of whatever kind of nut you're going to use, but you better be sure people can. Mm-hmm. A nice red pepper we're going to thinly slice and devein and deseed and thinly slice. Let's have about 3 stalks of celery. We're going to slice it diagonally. And a whole little, like 2 tablespoons of chopped scallions. They go really nice in here, and they do look lovely in the dish. You just chop them all up. That's not a bunch, because a bunch is bigger than that. When you get all done, it should be like 3 tablespoons of it. If you can get your hands on this, a package of a can of corn, the little baby corns look kind of cute. I don't have a thing about it, and they're very expensive. You can use just canned corn that you drain really, really well. In the United States and the other places too, a canned corn comes in water. It doesn't have to have that kind of an odd juice to it. The kind that's in water, so it's nice and delicious and crunchy. And you can actually eat that right out of the can if you wanted to. You're going to use fresh. Yours will be better than mine. It's just that it's so much easier to use the can, so much faster. And let's have about 4 ounces of bean sprouts. If they've got really big tails, I like to trim them off just because they look cuter, but you don't have to. A tablespoon of soy sauce. And another tablespoon of sweet chili sauce,
mm-hmm.
which is a little bit of an oddity around here. So we're going to cook the noodles. We're going to cook them al dente, and we're going to drain them really, really good, and we're going to set them aside for a minute. Okay, so they're cooked. We're going to take our oil, and we're going to heat it either in a wok or a skillet. If you're making this with the group, which is kind of a fun group activity, it is cooler to use a wok. Quite frankly, I use a big skillet because I don't happen to own a wok. But it looks very nice.
Mm-hmm.
This is nice to make with the group because it's fast and you can pre-measure out everything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've got the oil heated. We're now going to add the cashews and toss them for about a minute until they're golden. It makes the flavor come out. Then we're going to add the pepper, the celery, the scallions, the corn, and the sprouts. Stir fry it for another 3 minutes. This needs to be nice and crunchy. We're not trying to soften anything. We're going to stir in the noodles. And then we're going to make sure that it's all not in one spot. We're going to add the soy sauce and the sweet chili sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Toss it all around so that the sauce gets all over and you don't have one portion that has lots of salt because of the soy sauce and then another portion that's really spicy because of the chili sauce.
Mm-hmm.
And there you have it. You've got cashew noodles. Please, 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 people are asking me about fish sauce. I know this is the adventure recipe, and yes, I suppose you could, but please don't, because people don't expect fish sauce in something that is basically vegetarian looking, right? It is, and also you can see the kind of nuts we need to list it, of course. Fish sauce, a lot of people are allergic to seafood. I substitute soy sauce whenever I see the word fish sauce, and because it's salty, it's brownish. It's tasty, and it's kind of similar, yeah. And then you won't poison someone.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, we're making a convivial atmosphere. So that's the adventure recipe.
Mm-hmm.
Simple to do. If you've got the facilities, I always say it's cooking together, and then I get lots of comment that it's not really cooking together, it's watching someone else do it. But it's a group activity. If you've got a stove available, you can pre-measure out all these ingredients. It's like they do on television, yes, little Tupperware pots. And make it as you stand there with everybody watching. You talk about it, you make it, it smells really nice, it doesn't take very long, and of course we're going to have a whole bunch of lovely rice to the side. Those of you who have been here before know that I do happen to own a rice cooker. It is just about the only odd, only does one thing, that's what makes it odd, type appliance that I own because it makes rice so beautifully and I use a lot of rice. But no matter what you do, you need to have the rice on the side. Yeah. Yeah, people are saying, I don't want to put rice with my noodles. Okay, have it to the side and see how people feel about it. I think that the sauce goes really nice on the rice, but maybe this is a pasta. It's a cashew noodles, and it doesn't need the rice underneath. Good point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can offer it. You offer condiments on the side, and that's our adventure recipe. And I see that our time together is nearly up. Well, I hope you learned something. I always do. These shows, I always say, are organic. Hello, I can usually say that in a better sentence. They're organic because they go where your questions take us. Yes, and your answers. And thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for being here. Thank you for coming back. I see we have a lot of returning people, and welcome. To the newcomers, too, please do come back. If you'd like to contact us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is recipeforpeacenow.com. Last 5 shows archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last 5, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for participating. Thank you for being here. and please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.